every time there has been a big technology in our lives, starting with fire to like agriculture, going to the printing press, then to rock and roll, right? Like then to the internet.
You just took us through history, Bean.
Yeah, that was the history of the world with Bean. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about taking a break from social media. Bean?
I'd love a break.
What's up, buddy?
Nothing. What's up, buddy?
Good morning to you.
Well, good afternoon to you.
I'm bummed.
Can I ask why?
Because you were literally just right next to me a couple days ago, and now you're back on a screen, and this is sad.
I know. I realize life isn't quite as exciting without you by my side for true sidekicks.
You know what? That's the most romantic thing anyone's ever said to me.
You're welcome.
Truly. We had so much fun. We did a little photo shoot. Guys, we'll be sharing those pictures.
So fun.
Check us out on Instagram at Signal with Maury and Melissa.
Thank you.
Is that what it is?
Yes. And thank you for that shout out. I'm working hard over there.
We'll share our little photo shoot pics. We had a good time. We got our hair did. We went out on the town, had a photographer following us around. It was fun and funny.
Paparazzi.
How you doing today?
I'm tired because I'm jet lagged from just being in California and then coming back to the East Coast. And it's cold. This is the first week it actually got cold too. So I returned not only from California, but I returned to cold weather. Today was the first frost of the season.
Yikes. I relate. I looked at the weather and it's going to be in the upper 60s later in the week.
Shut up. It doesn't even hit the upper 60s today. I think 64 is maybe the high. So shut up.
Well, I miss you. Up in your sweaters and your scarves.
That's time.
You know, it's a vibe. I miss it.
It is. It's a vibe for sure.
All right. Well, shall we get to hotter hype?
I would love to.
You truly, we've decided, are going to have no clue whatsoever. We're not going to tell each other at all. We don't even tell each other the topic. So you're going in totally blind. Hey, guys, before we go into our hotter hype segment, just two quick things. Reminder that we are answering listener questions at the end of most of our episodes where we don't have a guest. So please write us. We are at MauryandMelissa@gmail.com. So shoot us a note. We'll put that in the show notes. And also, please share this podcast, leave us a review. That's the best way you can support us and allow us to keep making this show. Okay, so today for Hotter Hype, we're going to talk about Elizabeth Gilbert's newest memoir, All the Way to the River. Have you seen anything, heard anything
Negative.
About this memoir? No.
None.
Okay,
None.
But you do
Should know- I have?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think it made a splash. It wasn't as big as like the Let Them and all that. But you know who Elizabeth Gilbert is, right?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So the amazing best-selling author of Eat, Pray, Love, which turned into that awesome movie.
I never read. Did you read it?
I read it and I saw the movie with Julia Roberts.
Neither. I did neither.
Oh, really? It's good. You should. You know what? That should be something you do in your cozy fall sweater this weekend.
Okay. We'll
Watch Eat, Pray, Love. All right. So Elizabeth Gilbert came out with a new book called All the Way to the River. It focuses on her relationship with her partner, Raya Elias. First, they were friends and then they became lovers. Raya was a recovering addict who was later diagnosed with terminal cancer. And in the book, Gilbert writes about how their love sort of intertwined with addiction, caregiving, loss, grief. The book is really a memoir where Gilbert's really talking about her own struggles with addiction, not to substances, but to love and validation addiction as a sort of kind of compulsion. And it really is not, you know, such a linear love story, but like it shows you all of the pain and suffering that comes with, you know, when you are addicted to love and then you're with an addict and then what they need from you and what you lose. So, you know, I think that it actually is quite true to a lot of those of us who have been in relationships with people who have any kind of addiction. It feels really real. The title comes from a metaphor. It's a saying between Gilbert and her partner, Raya, which was about certain friendships, saying going all the way to the river, meaning that you will be with them through the deepest parts of life. I'll go with you all the
I'll
way.
Do, to I'll the go river. With you all the way to the river. And I didn't read Eat, Pray, Love, but this feels like quite a juxtaposition to the concept of that being free and loving yourself. Wasn't that the whole idea of that book?
It was. Yes. Wow. It was about learning. But in the beginning of that book, she is, again, leaving a relationship and is love addicted, because it ends like the triumph of that book is finding a man in Bali.
Oh. Okay. I didn't know.
Okay. So here are the basic kind of things, the guidance it leaves the readers with. One is really owning your complicity, like embracing accountability. She doesn't just tell Raya's story, but she acknowledges her own enabling, her own unhealthy dependencies. And readers are encouraged to really like reflect on their own roles in their relationships, you know, not to see yourself as a victim, even if it is a harmful situation, but to see how you enable. Talks about the importance of confronting pain and grief and loss directly, not numbing, but really sitting in that discomfort, understanding that grief is messy, love is messy. It does really touch on a lot of the themes of this podcast, spiritual surrender, just sort of letting go, that part of healing involves acceptance, accepting what you can't control, what you can't fix, what's beyond your power. And it really does touch on the idea, like I said, that addiction isn't just to substances, but it can be to things like love and sex and validation. Yeah. The book has gotten a lot of praise, one for its emotional honesty and how raw and vulnerable it is. They, you know, lots of reviewers were like, I was looking it up and they were saying Gilbert spills everything, not just the beautiful parts, but the ugly, shameful, painful ones. She's a beautiful writer. If you have read Eat, Pray, Love or anything she's written, you know that she writes in this really beautiful prose. And it's really courageous. Like, it's a topic that's courageous to write about, especially after losing your partner. So let's get to the criticism and then you can weigh hot or hype. So at the same time, there has been, it felt like to me, the reason I picked this is like, I was hearing the same amount of criticism as I was praise for this book and her work. The first is that there's this feeling that it's self-indulgent and overwrought with like this self-indulgence. Some readers, some of the reviews I read found the emotional intensity sometimes to like dip into melodrama. Like it was lacking, I guess, this authenticity because it became so melodramatic, and that people were feeling like it, people called it juvenile poetry or preposterous prose. That's interesting. A reviewer wrote preposterous.
That's hard to say.
That's a good concept. Inconsistency of the quality of the writing. I mean, that happens in, I think, every memoir. I see this all the time. Right. But like sometimes it's very flowy. Other times it's poetic. Sometimes it's really clipped. So it's not like you're getting a different experience in every chapter. The biggest thing that came from the criticism is this idea of privilege and perspective. You know, Gilbert's well known for being a really successful author with significant financial means, a visibility, you know, a platform. She's got a lot of visibility. So there's a lot of questions about how that shapes the narrative. And I do think that this is the problem you see with a lot of privileged self-help authors, is it's not resonating with people, because I think when you don't have that access, what you need is at least for the person who's trying to guide you to make note of their own privilege, or to at least acknowledge that, you know, what I'm about to tell you to do may not be possible because you might be working 60 hours a week and you can't take a day and go, you know, take care of yourself or take your partner somewhere and relax. And I think that every time we talk about a book like this, especially if it's a white female author with means, you're going to see this criticism pop up around the privilege part. I think for me, it's just acknowledgement probably would make some critics feel better. And then lastly, people are obviously criticizing the self-help, just framing of it. Some people feel like there's some cliche pieces like the mediumship or the supernatural language she uses. I could not disagree more, but that part of it didn't resonate with people. So hot or hype? Hot, emotional, raw, talking about grief. Hype, again, a memoir by someone who may be more privileged than others and therefore is offering guidance that isn't possible for everybody. Bean?
All right. I don't, maybe this is my privileged perspective, but even though she's coming from a place of privilege, it's still her memoir. It's still her work. I don't know how self-helpy it actually is. because I didn't read it. So I couldn't tell you what she's trying to impart on those who are reading it. But it sounded to me more like it was her own story she was telling. So who are we to say that's wrong? That's not your story, whether it's privileged or not privileged. She's not forcing you into doing what she did. I'm assuming she was just sharing what she did.
Yeah.
So
you're giving it a...
I'm giving it a hot. Why not? Plus, it's a story. I also think it's really brave that she was able to, one, write about something so traumatic and terrifying and show her role, her negative role in that as well, rather than making herself be the hero who took care of a partner. And she could have framed it totally differently and chose to be vulnerable. And that's super hot.
I liked hot. Why not? I'm also going to go hot on this. And I think that the bigger issue here for me in the hotter hype of it all is like what happens when someone with significant privilege writes a memoir like this. How hot or hype is that? I do think, and you know, I've said this because I'm on the self-trust revolution path here.
You are.
Self-help is filled with a lot of people who have this identity, that there are a lot of self-help authors that have a similar demographic and socioeconomic identity. And people are getting, I think, a little filled up with that voice. And so I think that Elizabeth Gilbert is getting the brunt of that feeling. I don't think that this is about her book or what she did. And I agree, it's super courageous. I think writing about love addiction is really important. It's an important thing for all of us to talk about and know about. Also just enabling and what that does and how accountable we have to be when we enable other people. So I'm going to give it a hot for all of that and just say, hey, you know what? Let's also pay attention to when we're being hard on female writers, because there is some misogyny in here too. I don't know how many male writers, even when they're white and privileged, get this kind of criticism. I just want us all to check if we fall in that category. Is there any misogyny going on where, you know, we're trying to tear other women down? I don't love that. So I'm going to give it a hot.
I'm going to read it. Not only am I going to give it a hot, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. Give it a read. I think you'll like it.
Do you want me to do a good transition?
Yes.
Reading that will allow for me to get off of the digital space and spend my time in a book.
I love it. That's a really good transition. All right. So we're going to talk about what we're calling digital cleanse. And let me set the stage for you here, y'all. Please. I think that I have a bit of a hidden motive behind this episode, which is maybe to convince you listeners to give this a try. Because I did. And I have to say, it was life changing. I took Instagram and TikTok and X, Twitter. I refuse to call it X. All of those things off my phone for a week. And it happened because I was noticing myself falling into the depths of despair in a way that was not productive for my life, my kids, me, my clients who I coach all the time. I was noticing my energy was really drained. My anxiety was at an all-time high. I was just not in a good headspace. And I think that the critical part of making this happen, and take this with you, please, was paying attention to how I felt while I was scrolling. Like really paying attention. What does this scrolling feel like? And what I was noticing is, ooh, I'm feeling worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. By the way, I just have to say, taking a break from seeing the orange monster at all is really nice. Like not hearing his voice or the shit he spews for a few days, that was lovely. So then I ended up also having to just not check CNN
as much. Just going to say, though, do you read the news?
Yeah. But anyway, so that's how it started. And I took a week off. I still had I have my lovely, lovely, lovely friend, team member, Caro, who posts for me on social when I can't. She edits my videos. And so I checked with her. Can we still make sure I'm still like putting my messages out there? I will record them. I will talk to my community on Instagram, but I just don't want to be scrolling and checking. She's like, I got you. So she did that part for me. And I have to tell you, within the first 3 days, I noticed a tremendous difference in the way that I felt and in how much time I had on my hands. I mean, really? I couldn't believe it. Yes. I had so much time.
Plus, coming from your perspective where you are posting and you are on this platform and looking for people to understand your message, not counting every like and wondering what that is like, must be a whole weight off your chest.
Big time. Like not looking at my own videos for sure, but I, what I realized is it's more the other content that really was draining me. And then when I had all this time on my hands, I had this like, holy shit, are you serious? Is that what you're doing with your free time? I was like all of a sudden taking care of the plants in the house, which made me be outside more. I was playing with the dog more. I was like hanging out with the kids in a different way. I started like trying these new recipes. I'd put on my weighted vest because I'm a woman in the 40s, and I would walk more. Like it just opened up my world a little bit more. It was like, go do stuff. Don't just scroll. And it's not even like the scrolling happens. You all tell me if you relate, sitting on the couch. Catch yourself. No. It's happening like kind of while you're just standing there.
All the time.
In between the pulling the thing out of the fridge and opening your laptop. But like that should only take you a minute. Notice it's taking you longer because you're stopping and pausing and scrolling a lot.
I have tried just... it's a very minor one, but when I'm standing in line somewhere, you know how we all reach for our phones immediately? Because yes. God forbid you stand there for 3 minutes. I have tried to not reach for that immediately. But outside of that, it's funny that you say while you're scrolling, you're feeling worse. Because I feel like I feel worse at the end of it all. But in the moment, I feel like I'm getting these little dopamine bursts.
Yeah.
And then I am more down afterwards. So the only way to fix that is by getting more dopamine bursts.
Yeah.
By going back onto the – and I'm not even on TikTok and I'm not on Twitter. I'm just on Instagram. But it's like just completely it's sucking my brains out of my head. But at the same time, it's offering me an escape from the world. So yeah. I'm super torn about the whole thing.
Well, so let's get into that. Why is Please. This so hard? Studies upon studies upon studies have found that the center in your brain that social media lights up is the same place where nicotine addiction lights up. Delish. So social media actually has replaced this dopamine hit, and it has literally become an addiction, like physiologically. That there is a place in your brain that lights up that studies are showing is as addictive as nicotine, that you just reach for the thing because your brain is like, I need that dopamine hit.
Right.
Here's the challenge. This is what I believe. When social used to be about pretty pictures and funny clips, like Funny or Die, which you and I live and die off of.
Right.
There was more of an actual serotonin boost that comes from looking at beautiful things and laughing or watching a kitten and a puppy be friends. I know that's your favorite kind of thing.
One of my faves.
What's happened though is that social media has become such a platform for divisiveness and news and hate speech and anxiety and images of war and starvation. That place that we used to go to for serotonin actually isn't producing serotonin anymore because the images we're getting flooded with are very anxiety inducing and they can leave you feeling quite powerless. Now, this does depend on what's in your feed. I have to say, I spent like 5 minutes on TJ's feed. It's all dog and skiing videos. That's all it is. And I'm like, oh, no wonder
you
don't get
it. What's wrong with my brain?
Yeah. No wonder you don't get it. So it totally depends, obviously. But I just, like, I think pay attention to also what's in your feed. Even if for me, there's a lot of spiritual content in my feed.
Yeah.
It's still not enough to offset the anxiety-inducing kind of negative darkness that's coming at us.
So what prompted you? Just you were like, oh, shit, I'm feeling super anxious when I'm on the phone, you noticed.
No,
like, I don't even think we can identify that half the time.
I was feeling generally like I was, you know, I am the kind of person where if I'm suffering, I notice it very quickly. And I don't like to sit in suffering. Right. Maybe I need to read Elizabeth Gilbert's book so I can get more comfortable with grief. So I'll always start this analysis of like, why are you so anxious or why are you so down? And I'll start to pay attention to the things happening in my life as they're happening. to see if I feel better or worse when they're happening. So like, oh, I'm having dinner with the kids and TJ. Oh, I feel a little lighter right now. I went for a walk. Oh, I feel a little lighter. Oh, I'm scrolling. I do not feel lighter. I noticed, oh, this is draining me. What would happen if you take a break? And so I did the 7 days, and then this is the shock of all shock. I did not want to go back. I started to feel myself getting anxious about putting it back on my phone. So then I did another week, and that was super easy. It was almost like I forgot that this thing even really existed. I was like missing stuff. Like when Jimmy Kimmel got canceled or whatever, I didn't even know. PJ had to tell
me. Who's Jimmy Kimmel?
Literally. I was just missing stuff. I found that there was so much more peace in my brain.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I actually, truthfully, I hate social media. So it's not that challenging for me to not want to go on it.
Yeah.
But it's a vicious cycle. Like when I'm feeling more down, which can be a lot these days in this world we're living in, I need to escape my anxiety mind. And sometimes I think because of those little baby hits that that is helping me escape it. But then it's actually making me more depressed, which is making me want to escape that more, which makes me go back to social media. But yeah. When I'm off it, I'm like, it's very clear to me that it's so much better when I'm off it. But not everybody dislikes social media in that way. A lot of people really enjoy it. So I'm curious how that affects them getting off of it when it's something they truly find enjoyable.
I think that's the point that I'm arguing is like test your enjoyment level.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy? Are you really enjoying it? Or for example, I'll tell you one of the negatives is like I definitely felt more bored than ever. Like that's I was saying a lot, oh, I'm bored. You said that's good for me.
Yes, boredom is good for everybody. Boredom is good for your brain. It's good for creativity. It's good for everything. It's good to be a little bored.
Yeah. So I definitely noticed that that was happening. So I don't know. Like, I think if you feel like I really enjoy social media, okay, why? What are you really enjoying about it? And I'm not saying I am not a extreme, it's all got to go or not kind of person.
Right.
I just think it's an interesting moment to pause and examine our relationships with it. And like, let's talk a little bit just about like the research about why it's important.
I love numbers. Thank you.
Sorry that I don't have numbers, but I do have some side effects.
Thanks.
Okay. So research is finding that there is a link between increased hours on social media and anxiety and depression. So there's one. The second effect that research is finding is that there's a loss of focus and creativity.
Yes. Oh, sorry. I got related. I will say when I am off of it longer, I feel like I wonder if it's the short clips that we're getting and our brain can only focus for a short amount of time, or if it's just slowly sucking the brains out of my ears and I get more brain back when I don't look. But the focusing, it's like there's a brain fog almost when you're on it too much.
But also because what happens is if you're consuming 30 to 90 seconds of content back to back to back to back, the part of your brain that can focus for longer periods of time is not getting exercised. So
you just mansplained it.
Oh, I did? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's good though. I said I wonder if it's in part because of that I'm only getting these bits of content.
Oh, okay. I was just looking at my research and validating. Yes, that is what it is.
Listen up, nerd.
Part of your brain that is meant to focus for longer periods of time does not do that as much. And so it's losing its ability to focus. And then the creativity part, to your point about being bored, boredom births creativity.
Exactly.
And so there is an importance to kind of not having something to fill your brain with.
Right.
That then allows your imagination to start filling your brain.
To run
and then
wild.
That creates, you know, things. You write something, you draw something, you make something. Like that's where the creativity comes from, is this boredom.
All I can keep thinking about is that it has this impact on us and we're like fully formed adult humans, but our children, are living on these things.
I know,
and this is how their brains are developing and forming, you know, their neurotransmitters are firing. And this is for the rest of their lives, will they only be able to focus in short little bursts?
Which I have to say, I think is an evolutionary thing. I know that that's really controversial to say, but
yes,
I think every time there has been a big technology in our lives, starting with fire, going to like irrigation and agriculture, going to the printing press, then to rock and roll, right? Like then to the internet. Every time
you just took us through history, Bean.
Yeah, that was the history of the world with Bean. But every time you go through that, like there is an evolutionary thing that happens to humanity and to our brains. And so I just always wonder when I do see the kids being so tech savvy and then now with AI, are they meant to be prepared for something else? A world that is different, so, perhaps, so different than we can even imagine. But that said, I have on the kids' phones a app time limit. So they only get an hour and 30 minutes a day on all social media. And, you know, I will always notice my youngest will just like, because they can request more time. He tries to do that. And sometimes I give it to him, sometimes I don't. But I agree. It needs to be limited, even though I think it's allowing their brains to evolve to something else.
Fascinating. I'm going to counter that with this interesting little snippet I saw on Instagram the other day about how it was a teacher who teaches high school or middle schoolers or something. And she was saying that this isn't just social media. This is being on the screens all day, which is part of the digital detox. When they're in school, it's like they are having physical withdrawal symptoms because they're so used to being on screen. She said they're irritable. They're like jittery. They can't sit still. They're not as nice. They can't focus because they're having actual symptoms of withdrawal because this is like a true addiction.
It is a true addiction. I'm telling you, I noticed the withdrawal in myself.
I noticed myself
getting a little bit jittery. I noticed myself reaching for the phone and having to be like, stop, you know, and then that's why I had to take it off altogether because then it was like, I'd open it, it wasn't there. But when it was, I tried for the first 24 hours just to say, I'm not going to go on. No freaking way did that work because the habit was already established. I would mindlessly pick up my phone and click on that little pink square. Like just that's just the habit that was there. And I noticed the withdrawal. That's what really freaked me out is like, oh my God, we are all addicted to this thing.
100%.
Let's take some power back because we so want to be in touch with the deepest, wisest part of ourselves so that we can suffer less. And that part of ourselves is getting drowned out by all of these ways that we're constantly trying to fill our brains with noise, and social media is facilitating that.
Way to tie it back to intuition. So that can't be prepping our youth for that. They need to hear themselves. They can't hear anything anymore.
Yeah, totally. Okay, last few things. There's also research is finding part of what's leading to this anxiety and depression are what we're calling comparison traps. So, you know, really looking to social media as the epitome of what you should have or look like or be or how your family should be, and not remembering that that is a picture someone altered or a moment in time, not their full day, and then comparing yourself to this one snapshot, which is so flat and not complex, and the tension that creates in us. So those are all the reasons why, oh my God, again, you guys can't see this, but I'm on a Mac and every time I move, an emoji pops up.
I think it's excited and it's encouraging a digital cleanse is what it's doing. It keeps giving us the thumbs up, like go for it. Let's give this a go. So tell us if folks want to do this. Before you tell us some of your ideas, I'm going to share one of my tips when I feel like I'm really on too much. Do you ever go and look at your hours you've been on, like your daily average? It scares the fuck out of me. I'm like, I haven't even been awake that many hours. Like, how is that my average use right now? I do it to my oldest too. I'll be like, you've been on the phone too much. She'll be like, no, I haven't. And I'm like, check your hours today. And then she'll be like, oh, you're right. It's a lot.
Wait a minute. Do you use a white noise thing on your phone?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Oh, you know what I figured
only
out?
Only when I travel. Oh, it's on
mine
when you're sleeping?
Mine was always so long. So then you have to go look at what it is. And my white noise thing is like 8.5 hours of that time. So a heads up for y'all. When you go check your screen time, if you use something that's working while you're sleeping, it's going to track that.
All right. So some tips for folks who want to not just – well, let's start with digital cleanse from social media. I think there's a difference between breaking from social media and breaking from screens.
Yeah, I'm very focused on the social media part of it. Okay, there's a couple of things you can just start to do this slowly. The first is just decide to do screen-free mornings or evenings. So nice. One of the things I did before this, because TJ pointed it out, he's like, you reach for your phone immediately and that's not a good vibe, is I wouldn't pick up the phone at all until I was up, teeth brushed, coffee in hand. So just like giving yourself whatever deal you make with yourself that you're not going to be on social in those or in the evenings, you know, I'm going to put the phone down at X time and I won't be scrolling out. So you can start with a little baby step like that where you pick morning or evening.
Feels the other thing you can,
the other thing you can do, like I said, that I do for my kids is literally set an app timer on your social media apps and it'll tell you you've been on Instagram for an hour. And then it just reminds you, obviously you can override it, but it's a good way just to interrupt the scrolling process and tell you what's going on. The other baby step that's similar to the morning evenings is pick a day a week that's a social media free day just for that day. And then just notice, like if your social media free day is Thursdays, like how do I feel on Thursdays? What's the difference between how I feel on Thursdays than I do the rest of the week?
I feel like for me, it would be super easy to give up social media. It's like you were talking about that unconscious reaching for your phone. I'll just check something else. I'll just text you or I'll just check the internet or I'll do something. I want to be able to break from the, from that urge to grab my phone.
Right. But that's okay. I was playing my little puzzle game a lot.
Oh, you were?
But the puzzle game's not filling my head with noise. It's actually very meditative to, for me. So I was also just relaxing during that time.
It's like how I do the New York to all the New York Times games before I go to bed, although you're not supposed to be looking at your screen, but I like to do all of the games. It's my meditative experience to calm my body.
You did tell me that recently, and I thought that was super cute, Grandma.
Yeah, you called me grandma. Don't try to act like you thought it was super cute.
I thought it was all cute, the Grandma games, Bean. She's like, I get in bed and then I do all my word games.
I love it. Strands.
Things. That's probably why you sleep so unbothered. Actually, no, not recently.
No, I don't sleep unbothered. I really would like to remove the screen an hour before bed like you're supposed to be doing, but like the rest of the world. Tip. Yeah, it's my
putting
calm down
time. Putting your phone in another room at night. This is hard. So many of us use this as our alarms or like for me, white noise. But if you really feel tempted and you want to give this a shot, put your phone just away from your bed in another room, plug it in. We don't do this anymore. We've lost control in high school, but we used to make the kids plug the phones in outside their rooms and then go to bed. Try it for yourself. Give yourself, this is the takeaway, one tiny break consistently.
Moderation. Yeah. We all like it. Moderation.
Yeah. And see how you feel. Yeah. See if you feel better. Because guess what? We want y'all feeling good. That's the whole point. And we want you to have the space to hear the wisdom within you. And so this is one way that you can create that space.
And there are a lot of positive aspects, I think, also of the screen and the technology and social media, of the connection and the accessibility and things that are positive. So we're not telling you it's all or nothing, friends. We're telling you, take a beat.
A little beat. All right. Well, Bean, we're going to close out the show today with our listener question. Are you ready to roll? Guys, reminder, email us at melissaandmaury@gmail.com.
Or maury and melissa at gmail.com.
Okay. Guys, reminder, email us at maury and melissa@gmail.com with anything you'd like us to mention or answer during our listener question portion. Ready, Bean?
Ready.
Here we go. Hi, ladies. Really loving this new format. Thank you.
Oh, adorbs. Thank you.
This is more of a general feeling I'm wondering if anyone relates to. Lately, my intuition has been telling me I need to cut off a relationship with someone. They're an old friend. Every time I spend time with them, I have this thought show up. This relationship has run its course. Is this common? Any advice on what to do with it? It feels sort of drastic just to cut ties with someone I've known for over 25 years. Bean, did you write this in about me?
I did. And I was like, I don't know what to do. Every time I have this thought show up, I just don't. And I was like, really loving this new format.
Okay. First of all, we're going to give you an applause here for paying attention to how you feel around this person.
Oh, yes. Agreed.
That's really good awareness.
I agree. Especially when you're clouded with time.
Correct. Clouded with time.
Like
I said, correct.
Your mind is clouded well, we've been friends for 25 years. So,
oh yes. Yes. All right. So Bean, what do you think here? What should our friend do?
I always feel like I don't really have a clear answer. I just have some commentary, which could allow for the listener to come to their own conclusion. One, I'm a big believer in not all friends have to be friends for your entire life. I'm ride or die, like a mofo. I am your ride or die, but there have been people who have come and gone in my life who were really important for those moments. Like I can think very clearly, like even when you, just an example, like when you first become a mom, you might meet some mom friends who aren't really necessarily your cup of tea, but it works. Your kids are young together. You're going through that. Yeah. And then you grow apart as you get older. College, same thing in college. You know, you meet some people, it works in that time period where you're partying and you're doing this, but it might not work in real life. And that's okay. It's okay to have things that work for you for certain periods and things that don't work. My only advice would be, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to just cut it. I think that's actually a healthy boundary. If you feel like you're able to, what I would do would probably slowly back away.
Yes.
And not push myself and allow it to sort of naturally fade away.
Yeah. Listen, I agree totally. I also, you know, going to be no shock to those of you that listen, believe that your consciousness continues to expand as you evolve and the people around you may not expand. And that's happened to me a ton. I do think that the more you focus on your own growth and expansion and development and don't shrink, don't dilute yourself around this friend, the more likely it is that either they will also start to feel the lack of connection or also begin to shift. So I think that in addition to what Melissa's saying, which I agree, like it doesn't have to be so drastic where you have to have this intense talk, which by the way, I want y'all to know most people can't handle that kind of direct intensity. Because I'm learning that because I'm very direct and intense, but Bean has taught me.
Correct.
Not everyone loves that. So if that's true, it's not about having that talk. It is about sort of just guarding your time, you know, saying yes a little bit less. You know, maybe not talking on the phone, texting, just, you know, guard your time, but also notice if you're diluting your truth. Notice if you're saying less than what you actually think,
or if
you're pretending to be something else around them, because that's when you're full circle to Elizabeth Gilbert, enabling this other person. And, then you're also accountable for why the relationship is like this. So be fully you. Don't dilute, put some boundaries in place. Don't say yes all the time. And at the end of the day, I just want to say to the shame voice inside you, like Bean said, not every relationship is forever. Relationships come in to help us find new parts of ourselves so we can grow. And then sometimes we outgrow them. And that's like a very natural course of life. There's nothing wrong with you if you can't keep friends forever.
And maybe that person is just not a forever friend. You could have another forever friend because, Bean, you're my forever friend.
You're my forever friend, Bean. I hope that you listeners will be our forever friends. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. As always, we always appreciate when you review the podcast and share it. We will be back in 2 weeks with a new episode, and we'll see you then. Bye, Bean.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.